We're monetizing. We're going to monetize.
Gotta monetize, yes. Yeah.
Monetate.
Well, I think selling the books would really monetate it.
Yeah.
It was, that's like lactate, really. It's like,
yeah,
monetation.
Yes, yeah, money is flowing out of nipples.
Right. You got to squeeze a little, but it comes out. Right.
Money coming out of nipples. It's great. It's perfect.
You might have to get a pump to get the money to flow freely, but I think
we're
onto something there.
Sweet money teat. Oh, no.
Welcome to I'm Trying to Think, episode 7. I am your host, Chuck Werner, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Dave Stern. Say, assalamu alaikum, Dave.
Alaikum salam.
Yeah, something like that. I think it's, wow, alaikum. Who knows?
I don't know. It's not my language or religion.
Arabic, yeah.
Which, in retrospect, means that may have been disrespectful. Oh, well.
Oops. I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Check foundation-institute.org. And you can visit I'm Trying to Think on the web at imtryingtothink.com. And you can actually Google I'm Trying to Think podcast and find us. But you probably already know where our site is. Because, let's face it, you're not some guy going through iTunes and saying, wow, this random podcast by these people I don't know looks good. I'll start listening to it.
Unless
we are
on
iTunes. We never mentioned that. Yeah, we never mentioned that we're on iTunes, though.
We're totally in
iTunes. We are totally on iTunes.
You go into the podcast thing, you search for our phrase. That stuff comes up. You can subscribe in your iTunes. iTunes. Have we said the word iTunes enough?
I don't know. Are they paying us?
Nope.
Then we've said it enough.
All right, then.
So, welcome to episode 7. Dave and I are back again. We've been doing really well. I think 7 weeks, 7 shows, this is an excellent start.
It's consistency, you know?
We're
getting to the plate every day. We're making the plays. I don't know. I'm just picking sports metaphors from, like, cross sports.
In the strike zone. Hey, actually, you know, I was thinking about something. Sports related. Apparently, the Japanese, being the Japanese, they've invented a robot who can bat 1,000 in the strike zone and a robot that can pitch.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, real fastballs and everything. And I think I saw footage of the robot who can pitch and the robot who bats 1,000 in the strike zone. It's pretty interesting.
Uh-huh.
Is
the robot pitching batting practice, or is it like throwing off curveballs, sliders,
I don't know.
Forkballs?
I don't know.
The mysterious Japanese gyro ball?
Seriously, they have a mysterious gyro ball?
Yes.
Does it contain lamb and spiced meat?
Oh, I hope so.
It's delicious.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know how a spitball, they would mess up the baseball by...
No,
you
know, I don't know.
Okay, well, with a spitball, which is banned, they would mess up the baseball by, you know...
Spitting on it?
Basically.
Yeah. Awesome. I don't know anything about baseball, really.
Oh. This is basically the fun... Because, you know, cheating in baseball, nowadays, they all talk about...
Is the sport, really.
No, they all talk about, you know, steroids, blah, 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 which is, you know, its own ridiculous, boring thing that I don't want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But old school cheating in baseball is awesome. Like, basically, to make the ball curve weirdly, you would spit on it to make it heavier, or you would basically hide, like, in your pocket or something, like, sandpaper or a nail file, and just scuff it in weird, weird ways. Now, that's just awesome cheating.
Well, couldn't you accomplish the same thing by, like, maybe giving the guy a dirt ball as his first pitch, then the ball's scuffed from hitting the dirt?
That's tricky because, like, umpires, like, will
replace balls.
Damn, those willy-nilly. Umpires. Yeah.
At any rate, since the Japanese have invented a pitching robot and a hitting robot that bats 1,000, why does it justify baseball's continued existence? We've perfected it.
Well, here's the thing. You know, Deep Blue exists. People are still playing chess.
I don't agree with that either.
Because here's the thing. It's going to be a thing now. It's... get the batting robot out. That's the sport. That's the new sport.
Isn't that a
can the batting robot hit a knuckleball? I don't know.
Aren't we really hearkening back to the baseball game, I think for the Sega Genesis, that involved robots.
Nintendo Base Wars. Yes, I hope so. Because that game was awesome, because what happened was basically, you know,
you just destroyed the opponent team.
You could just throw a ball at a team and, you know, destroy their robots. But also, that was a point where when basically any robot player reaching a base, you know, where there's a robot fielder, that usually resulted in a robot fight. How is this not a good thing?
Why?
How is this not good for the sport?
Since we've invented the pitching robot and the hitting robot, why aren't we just going to Base Wars as the form of entertainment? Because I would watch Base Wars.
My guess is that they don't have fielding robots yet.
Yeah, I would go to the... We have a beautiful baseball stadium here in Pittsburgh. I've never been there.
It is gorgeous.
Because it is gorgeous. The Pirates play there, and why would anyone want to see that? If they had robot pitchers and hitters, I would go. I would be very excited to go, actually. At the... You know, again, here in Pittsburgh, and actually... You know, a block from, what do they call that? PNC Park, I guess?
Yeah, that's the one.
A block from there is the Carnegie Science Center, I think, or Science Museum. I'm not sure the exact name, but they have a robot exhibit right now. And they have a robot that plays hoops.
Huh.
I mean, it's an enormous...
How are its handles?
I don't...
Can it slam and jam?
Basketball.
Does it defend the post?
Why don't we talk about... We should talk about robots in football, maybe, because then I could actually use technical jargon.
Is it a good help defender?
I don't know. I don't know anything about basketball.
How's it on the fast break?
I don't know. Regardless, what it is it looks like a giant crane. This thing is huge. It's bigger than Shaq. I mean, it is a big robot. It's really just an arm attached to the floor. It picks up the basketball and it just tosses it. And it'll actually do underhanded, sort of where the arm is forward and throws up.
Oh, man.
And it'll
so
do
it plays...
overhanded where the arm is twisted around and throws up.
I meant it does a lot of underhanded shots, so it plays basketball like I did in first grade. That's
or like, cool. Like granny shots or whatever.
Yeah.
But in the end, it had it was doing a solid like 60%. It looked better, but according to they had a statistics board up that actually kept track of its shot ratio. And it said like 60-something percent. But I never saw it miss one until almost about the time we were leaving. I finally waited until it would miss one.
60-something percent from the field would be a pretty impressive, but on the other hand, you know, how's it shooting from three-point range? How's it shooting with a defender in its, well, not face, I guess, but you know. Someone, you know, messing it
up.
I don't know. I don't think basketball robot's ready for prime time.
Given the power of the arm, I think it would shoot fine with someone in its face, because that would basically be somebody with a broken skull. It was big.
That sounds like the crane will probably foul out, get some flagrant twos, and get suspended.
I just wanted to see robot sports already. We had two seasons of, what was that, BattleBots, and that was subpar.
Well, that's not real robot sports. That's
it was robots
running into each other
with
remote control
stuff. The Japanese, I know, have like little robot soccer or something.
Yeah, I mean they have that over at mini soccer. Our alma mater, Carnegie Mellon, has a robot soccer team. I think it's the Sony Aibo dogs play soccer.
Well, regardless, I'd watch that. But we don't have any big versions. We don't have any stadium-sized robot sports yet, and that's just disappointing. It's 2009. Okay, look, Transformers the movie takes place in 2005, and it had hoverboards, flying cars, everything. 2010, we're supposed to be, if I'm correct, and that's 9 years after a robot decides to kill a guy by shooting him out the airlock, and that's when Roy Scheider goes into space in 2010, right?
Yes.
And we're not anywhere close to that. Roy Scheider has no plans to go into space next year.
No, I mean, that's always the thing about predicting the future is they get the big stuff wrong. Like, usually the things... No one expects the things that actually happen, and everyone suspects things that... Well, expects things that never happen. Like, you never saw, you know, in, like, 2010, A Space Odyssey, you know, Roy Scheider goes into space and, you know, does all the stuff, you know... With the Europa or whatever it is. I don't know. I haven't actually seen the movie. I read the book years and years ago and don't remember it. But you never see him, like, pay his bank account without wires, you know?
Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy.
And very good. Very useful. Actually, I'll tell you something funny about that. But first, I want to mention that the Jetsons was set in 2062. So we have basically 53 years, you know, give or take, to get some flying cities, some cars that go. I can't make that noise. I wish I could. And you know,
sassy robot maids.
Yeah, sassy robot maids. So here's a funny story about.
Although, you know, here's the problem with that sort of Jetson future, and I don't know if our like nerdiness will save this or if this is just a natural consequence of aging. Yes. But you know, assuming the timeline goes on schedule, and the Jetson future comes, we're going to be old. So, are we just going to be there like, here's a flying car, hey robot, I just want my internet. You know, is that going to happen to us?
Probably not to us, but there will be people that happens to. There aren't a lot of analogs to us, per se. I guess there are. You know, there are people
who like guys in the 50s who are like, you know, I'm building a ham radio.
Yeah,
you know,
and people who did electronic stuff in the 40s and
electronics
stuff.
Hobby kit. You know, that's the old version of
us. And I think those people still are into that. I don't think those people have...
Yeah, but
stopped.
Did they get into computers? You know, some of them did, some of them didn't, I would imagine.
Some of them know how to use the internet. Like, and they're like, I don't want the internet. I would prefer that we...
Be using ham radios.
Yeah, be using ham radios. I don't think there's a lot of that.
Hmm.
But maybe. But if we could get onto a sort of sideways topic here.
That's what we love to do. So go.
Yes. First of all, I want to say something. I am a big supporter of the Postal Service. People who complain about stamp prices going up and stuff should dig a hole and bury themselves in it.
Also, like...
For 40 cents or for, I don't know, 50 cents, I don't care. I don't know how much a stamp is right now. It doesn't really matter to me. I don't care. For 50 cents to send an item across the country in a matter of days, to me, amazing service. You know, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, I've never quite gotten the bitching about the Postal Service that much
so,
either.
There are a lot of people who complain about the Postal Service, and there's you know, a lot of people now who do almost all of their paying of bills and everything online. And I'm a big fan of paying bills online. I pay most of my bills online. But I think it's our gas bill and our electricity bill. To pay them online costs an extra $4. So for $4, really? I can have the convenience of paying them online. Or for less than 50 cents, I can send the people a check. So guess what? Guess what happens?
Yes.
So I kind of think it's funny now that basically the how super cheap the Postal Service is going to be it's going to become handy because the online people are going to start charging fees for the convenience, quote unquote. And so everybody's going to run back to using stamps.
Possible, yeah. If everyone starts hitting on these crazy fees, then yeah, I would probably start... I mean, I still mail a couple of my bills.
I hope that's a trend just because I find it hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I like hilarious trends.
You just want everything to go back to the Postal Service?
I enjoy irony is basically how it goes.
You know also, what we should start doing?
Yeah.
We should start doing like a Vincent and Theo thing where we just send each other long letters and just have like a sort of intellectual conversation that way. Even though we live like 10 minutes from each other.
Yeah, we could do that.
Just to have them, you know?
We could do that. Because people in the future are going to be very interested in the letters we wrote.
All right, we got rules.
We have to write them in big, stylized.
Yeah, we have to handwrite all of them.
No lined paper. It has to be plain paper.
Oh, man.
We should artificially age it, probably.
Yeah, just as a warning, though. On unlined paper in my cursive hand, it's going to be a fucking mess.
We're going to have to take some classes.
Uh-huh.
We want this to look good in a museum someday.
I
want to
calligraphize. Is that... Yeah, I was thinking, what's the verb of calligraphy?
I don't care what the verb is.
Calligraph?
I only care...
Calligraph it.
I only care the verb I can make up that will express my idea.
Uh-huh.
Which is calligraphize.
Right.
So, that's a great idea. I think we should get on it, but probably not right now.
Some postman is grooving to all our love letters. Some postman is gonna cry. Some postman is grooving to all our love letters. Some postman is gonna cry. Gonna cry. Gonna cry.
And welcome back to I'm trying to think. Dave, do you know what the Jetsons were in Spanish?
No.
Los Supersonicos.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that makes it sound better, really. Do you want to hear a funny story, Dave, involving me?
I like funny stories, and I tolerate you. I like funny stories. So that's, yeah, that sounds like a combination of things that is palatable.
It's palatable, yeah. So, last weekend, on Sunday, I went with my wife to the Eaton Park, which is a local diner. Dave, you're very familiar with the Eaton Park, I'm sure.
Indeed.
It's delicious, in my opinion, but I guess not everybody likes it, so.
I would say it's adequate for what it does.
It's a diner. Well, you know, so I went down to the area, the shopping center where it exists.
Okay, wait. The important detail that I care. Okay, yes. You just answered the question.
Which Eaton Park? Yeah, because everybody out there needs to know which Eaton Park.
Yeah.
So it's the Waterworks Eaton Park. But actually, since it's Pittsburgh, you can look that up on the Google and look at the street view and actually see exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, technology is exciting.
Yeah.
And by exciting in this case, I mean boring. But continue.
So, Dave, when you post this, when you post the podcast, make sure you post a Google Street View link to
so you can see from space.
Yes.
The Eaton Park.
No, you can see the street view of the Eaton Park where the story takes place.
Oh, yeah, so it's on the street.
So I'm walking into the Eaton Park.
Man, that just, I'm glad that that story hadn't had time to build up momentum.
It's good.
If it had,
we would have stopped it.
Yeah.
Walking into the Eaton Park, and I see a gentleman walking towards me. You know, just a kind of a white guy in a wife beater. But okay, I recognize
the gentleman. This is a loose use of the word gentleman.
Yeah, probably loose, but you could judge for yourself after I reveal to you who it was. Because I recognize the gentleman from his time on Saturday Night Live. It was Jim Brewer, stand-up comedian, goat boy, you know, other works.
Jim Brewer. Yeah.
Jim Brewer. He was doing stand-up in Pittsburgh, so
right.
I actually kind of put two and two together, knowing that he was in town, and you know, I was like, oh, that is really Jim Brewer. It's not just a guy who looks like Jim Brewer. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. So walking in, I tell the wife, hey, that's Jim Brewer. She's like, oh, that's neat. We just continue to walk in. I'm not going to stop for Jim Brewer. I mean, he's a minor celebrity. He's never done anything that I'm in love with, so not gonna stop and talk to Jim
Not
Brewer.
Worth being the annoying guy when it's someone you don't.
Right.
You're not that attached.
It's not even someone worth annoying. I'd be interested to actually come up with a list in my head of the people I'd be willing to annoy. But right. Anyways, so just walk into the place because, didn't stop to annoy him. But he had actually, I don't know what he went out to the car for, but he came back in, so he was in the Eaton Park while I was eating.
Right.
So, you know, that's it's surreal when you see a person who you've only seen through a television set in real life. There's some
right.
part of your brain that's like, I recognize that person. And, you know, the facial recognition centers of your brain go off. But there's another part
disconnect.
Of your brain.
It's right, a weird disconnect.
There's another part of your brain that's like, I recognize this person, but I've never talked to them. So what's going on? So I sit down. I order the buffet because the, Eaton Park, if you want to send me any gift cards or anything, you're Sunday brunch buffet, delicious. So I'm eating from the buffet, and Jim Brewer is at this table with his family, and which he has a family. Yeah, who knew? I didn't think Goat Boy would have a family, but he did. I guess everybody has a family, but I look over to the table, just glance, you know, and he's looking at me, which I found weird. Like, I mean, eye contact. So I just kind of turn around, and I'm thinking back now, Dave. When I was in college, I worked with the people who brought comedians to the
right.
to the school. So I had met several, you know, I've met Mitch Hedberg, I'd met Lewis Black, the Upright Citizens Brigade. You know, I've met various people who had performed, and I was trying to think if he had performed while I was there, if I had mm-hmm. talked to him maybe, and just, you know, that, because the facial recognition part of our brain is very powerful. So even if he had met me once.
Would he recognize you looking like you in college, though, now? Cause...
Yeah, it's similar facial hair. It's not that far off. But uh-huh. who knows? Maybe. But it's not. That's not really the point of the story, as we will get to. I sit back down, eat, get back up for the buffet, because you got to make 4 or 5 trips, you know.
It's a buffet. That's, that's how they work.
That's how America works. I look over again. He's looking at me again. I'm thinking, Dave, if you know this, I performed, you know, stand-up in the area for about a year. You know, I did open mics and stuff. I'm trying to think. I'd met a couple performing, you know, comedians, because they come through town. Some of them like to go to open mics and
right.
just see local flavor and stuff. And I'm wondering, did I ever meet him when he was performing in town? Did he, you know, did I meet him at, who knows, you know?
Right.
You never know. It's all blurring together. And, you know, why is he, because he looks at me, and I read the look as a look of recognition. I don't know. So I sit back down. I get back up one more time. Similar look. It's really weird at this point. I'm starting to feel a little weird. I don't know if maybe I should go over and say something, but I decide not to because I don't. I still feel like I would be creepy. So go through the rest of the meal, leaving the Eaton Park Diner. I catch a glimpse of myself in a mirror as I'm leaving. And a large chunk of my beard is missing from the right side of my face. I had shaved in some kind of goofy way where I just chopped off. So I'm very uneven. I've got like a beard on one side and just like a clip beard on the other side. It's a mess. I look like a maniac. And I realize everyone at the Eaton Park was kind of looking at me.
Right, you
just
didn't
notice. And it's because I look like a crazy person.
Ah.
So I turn to the wife and I say, I look like a crazy... What? My face is all shaven unevenly. What? Why didn't you tell me? And you know what she said?
No. What?
I thought you did it on purpose. It shows you the life I live. But so Jim Brewer has no idea who I am, except that he thinks I'm a maniac.
Yeah,
or no. Possibly...
You're the guy who shaves his face all messed up.
Possibly, I told this story to my father. He suggested that... the people at the Eaton Park were thinking, it's very nice of that young girl to take her special brother out for a Sunday meal.
Yeah.
Special needs kid. That's so crazy person, a special needs kid. That's the life I lead.
I see.
I thought that was a pretty good story about thinking that I'm famous, though.
Yeah, yeah. Because you just sort of have the mental thing, like, wait a minute. Yeah, like, cause by the third time, you're just like... Yeah, he totally knows who I am
from like 7 years, from 6 or 7 years,
from like 7 to 10 years ago when I was either some like assistant college kid booking things or a local stand-up comic,
amateur stand-up comic. Yeah, you feel really good about yourself, and then your dreams are shattered.
It's like, no, just a maniac.
Just a maniac. That's all right though. I mean. At least he'll remember me now as a maniac. Next time he sees me, he'll be steering clear. He'll be taking an extra 5 feet to get out of the way.
I know, the problem is he probably won't recognize you if you have normal face.
Yeah, if I have normal facial hair, he won't know me.
So basically that means you got to keep everything fucked up on the off chance that you meet Jim Brewer again.
I got to look crazy all the time because then celebrities look at me. Even minor ones. That's a way to live.
Yeah, since you said, not the, I'm going to agree with you. It certainly is.
Oh, well. So, Dave, there was an item that you wished to discuss as well. So, do you want to tell us about that item?
Yeah, sure. This is sort of, I'd say it segues reasonably, but it doesn't, but that's okay, you know.
Awesome.
It's a wide-ranging topic. So this Thursday, I was at a rock and roll show.
At a rock and roll show.
Yes. To clarify, you know, it wasn't, you know, any other kind
Can
of show.
Can I preempt your story with an interesting other story that's not
Fine.
Really a story?
It's, Fine. Go
actually,
for
I'm
it.
Just going to make a quick comment about a commercial.
Okay, sure.
So, I was watching the TV today.
Right.
And there's a new ad, you know, back to school time is coming.
Uh-huh.
And it was about the rock stare, which is apparently the term you use for when someone is staring at you. Like you're a rock star, or because you're dressed like a rock star. And it's an advertisement for adolescent to maybe preteen kids.
Right.
You know, to get back to school clothes that makes them look like a rock star. Except that it was for Kmart. I didn't realize that rock stars shopped at Kmart.
No, you know,
Is that where the indie kids are going now for their retro clothes?
No, but I think, you know, I mean, I've seen, you know... enough rock stars who wear, you know, a t-shirt and jeans that, you know, yeah, why not Kmart? Sure. That's rock star clothes.
Yeah. As another commercial comment, though, you know, Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus, has a clothing line for, you know, again, probably for the back-to-school crowd, available exclusively at Walmart. So I am torn between my hatred of Walmart, my desire not to shop there, and my hatred of Miley Cyrus and my desire not to give her any money. I don't know what to do.
I feel like two things.
Okay.
Well, three things, I guess.
All right.
One, you don't understand the definition of torn.
Okay, that's possible.
Two, I don't think you'd fit in most of her clothes.
Yeah, that's probably going to cause another problem, so maybe I should just...
Like legal problems, honestly.
Yeah, that probably... If I went out in the public in the clothes, legal problems. I could do anything in the privacy of my home.
Yeah.
And have. So, back to your story,
though. And then three. The third point was, you may at this point, just judging from these two things, be watching too much children's television.
SpongeBob SquarePants is really good, and it's on most of the day, so...
Yeah, and that... Like,
what's odd about it at this point is, you know, I've watched the show so much that when it's on, I don't pay any attention to it, really. It's just kind of background noise to me.
Uh-huh.
But commercials are new sounds, so my brain pays more attention to them than it does the show. Yeah.
That's no way to live. That's no way to consume entertainment.
So you went to a rock show.
Yes, I did. And then I think the two things... Actually, one thing that is sort of... was also odd and... but is not the point of the story is... that I first learned that John Hughes had died because a rock band told me. That's weird. You know? That's not a normal way to get news.
That's not usually how you get your news.
No.
So you were saying, though.
But anyhow, one thing I've noticed that I wanted to run by you because... I'm not sure if this is specifically an indie rock concert thing, a concert thing generally, or just a people standing around thing.
Okay.
So I wanted to sort of get your input on this. Essentially, there are three ways that people, like in a grand total of three ways that people who are standing around at least an indie rock concert will stand. And I can name them. You have... hands in pockets, thumbs out of pockets.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's a look I like.
You have arms crossed.
I don't like arms crossed people, but go ahead.
And you get arms akimbo sometimes.
Oh, you mean the hands on hips?
Yeah.
Hands on hips, that's nice.
Those are the, like, literally the three. I'm a hands in pockets, thumbs out of pockets.
It's because of comfort. It's a comfort thing. That is extreme. You don't have to do anything with your hands.
I will say, is that true at other concerts? And is that true when people are just standing around? Are those the only ways to stand?
No.
And I just notice it at indie rock concerts?
When you're standing in public, there are other ways to stand. But you still have to decide what to do with your arms. So, I mean, you know, at the bus stop, there's leaning on the bus stop shelter or leaning on a nearby wall.
Right.
But your hands have to go somewhere. They could get, you know, in pockets. You could do thumbs in, thumbs out. You could do akimbo, but you look a little goofy. I think that might be... you have to either be really impatiently waiting for somebody to put your hands on your hips, or you have to be preparing to do some sort of jazzercise with your hips, like forward and backward, or... Uh-huh. Maybe the time
or
warp.
The chicken dance?
Chicken dance, time warp.
So basically a terrible group dance. Terrible group dance.
Right, some sort of group dance. People who cross their arms. There's no way to cross your arms and look happy, really. You either look concerned or angry. I mean, you know, I'm giving you a smile. I look goofy, though.
Yeah, that does look a little... I think the crossed arms at a show is... It's going to be pretty neutral if you're just kind of there nodding.
Yeah, people in the audience.
It's neutral.
I just dare you. Go out, cross your arms, and
a big smile.
Give somebody a big smile. That person will not be standing around you for very long.
No, they'll be looking at you like you got a giant chunk out of your beard, man.
Yeah, like you got a giant chunk out of your beard. I actually, I sometimes deal with, you know, photographs as part of my work day. I deal with photographs where people are posed by photographers and pictures are taken of them. And that pose is always the one that basically goes right to the trash, is the arms crossed with a smile. It's just,
it's just mixed signals. It's weird mixed signals.
And photographers love it, and it's just terrible. I don't know what they're thinking, but that's one that they... cross your arms and give us a smile. This will go in the creepy file so that, you know, the people who want to publish things can never use this. That'll be great. Perfect.
All right, so now here's another question related to this rock show thing that I'm thinking about.
All right.
Is there a fourth way to stand at a rock show?
With your arms, what else are you going to do? You can put them up in the air.
Like you just that's don't
gonna
care,
get,
yeah.
That's going to get tiring very quickly.
I mean, there's like, there are, because there are the active ways you do things at rock shows. Like, you know, I'm pumping my arm up, going woo. Or there's, you know, for example, at this one, this was actually the first time, I think, in a while that I've been, like, inebriated at a rock show. For some reason, I never get around to, like, I'll have a beer or two or something.
All right.
But I'm not actively drunk at rock shows.
Mm-hmm.
I was at this one, so there's, you know, in that case, you know, I replaced my, you know, hands in pockets, thumbs, gets replaced largely, like, just dancing like a huge goofus. I will admit, just straight up, going straight down to Goofus Town.
So you didn't meet any girls then, I would assume.
No, that is not the purpose. That was not the purpose. I mean, I was there, like, with a friend.
If you hold your arms up, what is it? Just folic acid?
Arms up forever.
Folic acid builds up or something?
Some kind of acid. I'm getting mixed up. It's the acid, lactic acid in
lactic
your muscles.
Acid
lactic
builds
acid
up, right.
will build up.
So lactic acid builds up, and that's bad. You know, but
well, it's a workout. It's an anaerobic workout.
So
to just be holding your arms in the air constantly. Also, that would probably annoy people behind you.
Yeah, but especially if you aren't doing anything with them. I think that would give you the beard chunk look.
Yeah,
you would get the beard chunk look.
Could you just do a? What does it say if you literally just have arms down at your sides, doing nothing? Arms down at your sides.
I don't
sides.
Know. Hold on. I'm going to have to test this out. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to give it. I don't know that there's a really good way to do this. You could kind of... You're just standing there?
Yeah, just real generic.
No, I don't think there's... I don't think this is doable. I don't think...
Yeah, eventually they're going to creep into the pockets, or they're going to creep up to the hips.
I think my manner of standing at a concert, I got hands in pockets, no thumbs out, and I'm moving my right leg to the beat, you know? Mm-hmm. That's my...
Yeah, it's the leg or the head nod. Leg or the head. Leg or the head nod.
And I might go to arms akimbo for short periods of time, but not for a long period of time. Because then you're like, you know, it just doesn't look good.
Yeah.
There's no way to make that look good for long periods of time. So I...
Wait, okay, here's the...
It's the thing. As white guys, we have to figure out how to stand... At rock concerts.
Because dancing, and, you know, as someone who was dancing through a concert, you know, admittedly, it was a concert of white people, so, you know, the people who are kind of dancing and rocking out are doing it in a kind of goofus white person way.
Right.
But, you know, dancing like a goofus white person is not a primary go-to option.
I'm not worried about people of non-Caucasian ethnicities judging me for dancing skills.
I'm worried about everyone judging me for my dancing skills.
I'm worried about other white people looking at me and making that snap judgment. Is this a cool guy or, like, a loser? And, you know, that body language is, that's how they make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got your hands on your hips and you're just, like, bopping out back of, that's loser. That's a loser look. There's no way to make that look good. It also depends on the ensemble. If you're, like, in jeans, the thumbs and the hands in pockets is, like, the perfect look.
Mm-hmm. What if you're in a top coat and tails? Like top hat and tails.
You should be leaning on a cane. You should have a cane in front of you, and your hands should both... It should be at the right height so that you can have your hands down, both folded over top of the cane. Right. That's the look that you want for that. Do you have any other questions? See, now, how about a gorilla suit? No pockets.
I think gorilla suit...
The answer is it doesn't matter. Because the cool people are going to think you're awesome for being in a gorilla suit.
Also, I think gorilla suit, you can even get away with arms akimbo.
Oh, arms akimbo works for gorilla suit.
Crossed arms in a gorilla suit is strong.
Yeah, you can get away with crossed arms in a gorilla suit. It also depends on how you cross your arms, because there are two different ways. One is both your hands are down under your arms, right? And that's a different look, because that's sort of the beat boy look, if you will. where you just kind of lean back and you put your arms out.
I mean, kind of throwing, yeah, B-boy stance.
Yeah, then there's with your hands both on top of your arms. And that's the look of both my hands are on top. You know, my hands are holding my biceps. Mm-hmm. Maybe one is tucked in.
Now, if one is tucked in...
It's still bad. You can't smile.
There's also, there's the two tucked in, which mostly just means I'm fucking cold.
Yeah, I'm cold. Brr.
I'm cold.
Brr.
Is that a viable stance at a show?
Only if you want medical attention.
I love this band.
That guy has the chills. He's on the goofballs. Mm-hmm. Get him out of the concert venue. We don't need people on the goofballs here. What are you going to do? Can't take the goofballs at a rock concert these days. That's what we've come to. This isn't the summer of 69 anymore.
Or the summer of 82. I don't know.
No, it's not that summer either.
If it was, we'd be listening to Panama.
I think. Panama. It's a good song. That's just a good song.
Panama.
This podcast is sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Find them online at foundation-institute.org. The Foundation Institute will be sponsoring a lecture series on nationalizing wealth care. For more information, check their website. The Foundation Institute, planning for the future and tomorrow. And welcome back to I'm Trying to Think, Episode 7, with Chuck Werner and Dave Stern. Dave.
Yes.
Do we have any email requests, any questions that have come in through our website?
Well, I haven't checked since, like, maybe 2 days ago.
All right.
But
No. Okay.
No would be the question.
So...
Actually, now that I think about it, I set up a forwarder, so even without checking... If it happened, I would know. So, no. Okay. I can say that conclusively.
So, no one has asked us to solve any problems for them?
No.
Okay. Have we received any requests from the public good, from the public trust, as it were? From any nonprofit organizations or charitable societies?
No, nothing. I mean, the Foundation Institute pretty much tells us to keep on keeping on. Also say keep on trucking. They're very, like, 70s, kind of that way.
Have any think tanks appealed to us to come up with some answers for them?
Has Cato gotten back to us about whatever libertarian thing they want? They want us to do some libertarian stuff, right?
Probably, but I don't think they actually know that we exist yet. They just want that, generally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then no?
I don't think so, no.
Any research departments of major universities come to us with any appeals? That's a no?
That's pretty much a no.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know, when you say research department for major facilities, does, like, the commercial where, like, the hand points at you, does that count as a major university, and is that a research department, or is that an advertisement from a, like, ITT?
That's probably an advertisement for ITT. Did they say anything about trucking, or...
You could get an associate's degree in trucking, yes.
Or maybe, like, computer repair.
Or criminal justice. Criminal justice.
Okay, that probably wasn't a request then. Has anybody asked you any deep probing questions lately that you've not, that you want to bring up, that you want to throw out there?
There's one thing that's been on my mind for, like, the past 10 minutes, but you're not going to like it.
All right. Well, what's been bothering you, Dave? Let's talk about that thing that's been bothering you.
All right. It's been bothering me ever since you put the question to me.
Shut up.
10 minutes ago. And I got really enthused about it at the same time, which immediately turned you off of it. But I don't care. We're doing it anyway.
I'm just troubled, but let's go for it.
All right. Invention fight.
Man's
greatest invention.
Yeah.
Inclined plane. Fire, the wheel, what is it? What are we talking?
Inclined plane is the answer.
You going inclined plane?
Yes. Because inclined planes make guillotines with which you execute the, The bourgeoisie.
Honestly, in terms of pro inclined plane, I wouldn't have gone straight to guillotine.
I go straight to guillotine.
You know, honestly, I'm not that familiar with the construction of a guillotine. Where does the inclined plane come in?
The part that separates the head from the body is an inclined plane.
I thought it was a blade. That's like
that's
a blade.
What a plane. That's what do you think an inclined plane is?
This is a really, really acute angle.
Yes, but the inclined plane is anything like that. Swords, knives, axes, ramps.
See, until you said ramps, see, that's what I thought when you were saying inclined plane.
You think everything's about the ramp, man? No.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were including blades.
Those are inclined planes.
Okay, in that case, the inclined plane case gets a lot stronger.
I mean, what are you going to do with fire? Are you going to burn somebody to death?
Well, you could, but here's the thing. How are you... You're talking, you know, a guillotine. How are you making that, you know, steel? How are you making, you know, the metals you need to make these awesome inclined planes?
With other inclined planes.
My friend.
No, other inclined planes.
No, if you're
planes.
Doing inclined plane on inclined plane, that's stone on stone. You're making a stone guillotine. If you want metal in the mix, you need fire.
Okay, but fire isn't one of the six classical simple machines defined by Renaissance scientists.
No.
Lever, wheel and axle, pulley, inclined plane, wedge, screw.
Do you need fire to make a decent version of most of those?
I mean, I guess wedge is where I'm going, but still, wedge.
Mm-hmm.
Wedge, awesome. Also, greatest pilot in the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah, he never died and is not a main character. He's got that going for him.
Yeah, he's got that going for him. He's pretty awesome. Wedge Antilles is his name.
Yeah.
Wedge.
Okay. I think we've covered Star Wars and... Honestly, probably we may have mined everything from the topic of inventions, too.
Maybe
there
not.
Are six Renaissance...
There are six simple machines defined by Renaissance scientists, yes. The wedge, the inclined plane, the wheel and axle, the lever, the pulley, and the screw. I think. That was all of them.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I think my favorite is the screw, but that's just because I've been putting together a ton of furniture.
Yeah, but you put like Kegel together with Flügel. Because it's IKEA furniture. And the tool is probably the Gerflucken.
Actually, I mostly use a screwdriver.
Which is called a Gerflucken. And they aren't like proper screws. They're like Danish screws. Or Swedish screws. Swedish screws.
Actually,
Legos are Danish.
Oh, man. The screw
Legos are Danish.
Yeah.
IKEA is Swedish. I would much rather have Danish furniture made of Legos.
I feel like that would be uncomfortable for your bottom, though.
Well, you could put some padding on it once you assembled it. But the point is that you could assemble it in a lot of different ways.
That would be flexible and modular.
Much more modular than anything IKEA produces.
Do they have giant Legos?
Well, they have Duplos.
Yeah, but those don't seem furniture big. Like, you'd need to spend way too much time putting together. Do they have, like, furniture-sized big Legos?
They should. I don't know. Lego has two theme parks. Legoland. They have one in Copenhagen,
and
I think.
And Legolalia.
And what?
Legolalia.
One in California.
No, Legolalia, I think I was thinking of the word echolalia, which is some sort of condition.
Okay.
I don't remember. I think that's when you, like, sort of, as a brain condition, repeat things someone says.
The repetition of vocalizations made by another person. Yes.
Ah.
Echolalia.
Also, actually, it's not a condition so much as, well, as, hey, stop copying me. Stop copying.
It's a part of a syndrome. Yeah, it's a part of... It can be a part of syndromes. Like autism and stuff, I know.
And just being annoying. Guys, like, stop copying.
And being annoying, yes. It's like autism, Tourette's syndrome, and being annoying. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's a condition. It's a symptom of all of those. Yeah.
Right. So I guess Legolalia would be copying someone else's Lego buildings.
Yeah. And it could be a part of a condition, too. It could be a syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems like something someone on the autistic spectrum would do.
They have two Legolands. I have to assume those Legolands have furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So the furniture at the Legolands, I would like that furniture over IKEA furniture.
I've got to say, though, if we're going a giant Lego furniture...
Do you use wedges at all when you're creating IKEA furniture?
I don't think I use wedges.
Pulleys.
I use screws, no pulleys.
Wheel and axle.
Yes, because some of it has casters.
Ah, oh. Lever? A hammer is a lever.
Didn't use a hammer, though. I will say the, if I was using the Allen wrench instead of the standard screwdriver, the Allen wrench is kind of a lever. That uses leverage, at least.
It's a lever used to propel a screw.
Yeah.
Yeah. With rotational force. Torque, possibly.
Yes, that's the one. Torque.
So also, you're saying
torque,
basically...
Torque is actually also, amusingly enough, a guy who designed a lot of my IKEA furniture.
Yeah.
I think it's Torque nice Bjornlund.
Torque Bjornlund. Yeah, I think I met him.
I think that's actually... No, the funny thing is I'm not even making that up as a joke. I'm
pretty
sure... I'm pretty sure that's the name on a lot of stuff as a designer.
Being serious when you should obviously be making stuff up as a joke.
It's either Torque Bjornlund or Torn Bjorklund. I don't remember which.
Well... You're saying the lever and the screw are necessary to put together IKEA furniture, but not so much the wedge, the inclined plane.
That's one of the six simple machines of Spider-Man.
The six simple machines of Spider-Man. The web, the swing.
The spider tracker.
The spider sense.
Yeah. The little tracker bugs he puts on people sometimes.
Let me ask you a question. Do you like Spider-Man better using a little device that he invented that shoots out webs, or having webs as a part of his powers?
Device. That's how he's supposed to be. That's the Spider-Man I grew up with.
No, I'm sorry. Sometimes things are made better and refined with time. Spider-Man having web organs is better. Better than his mechanical thing. The mechanical thing... I'm sorry.
I mean, it never really made sense that he was that much of a genius chemist to develop this adhesive, yet he was always worrying about money. I will admit,
and
that made no sense whatsoever.
Point, the other thing is, if he were such a genius who could devise these tiny devices that would shoot webs, which, I mean, that's like mechanical and chemical engineering that he was an expert at, he could have made the world a much better place by actually using that skill rather than beating up guys trying to rob banks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like
he could have done
that.
Both.
You know, I like
part.
It for that old school comic book not making a lot of sense. But circling back to Lego furniture, which I'd like to do for a second. You know what I
think? Okay, well, the Spider-Man thing has not been settled. It's organs in the wrist. That's the way better. Biological power is better.
Technological, bizarre adhesive. I'm strongly in favor. But anyhow, you know, I think we can leave that open for now. Maybe if someone wants to weigh in, they can...
They could email us.
At contact@imtryingtothink.com.
Yes. Huh? Or a major university could contact us
to research
the issue.
Yes, or the Cato Institute could let us chart out the libertarian position on Spider-Man.
Which, obviously, the market would decide, the invisible hand of the market would decide whether organic biological web spinners or mechanical ones are better.
Of course. But anyhow... Lego furniture.
Lego furniture.
I think our passion for this is telling me one thing.
What's
one
that thing? Only,
that, you know, just our desire to have furniture made of giant Legos. We really need to ramp up production on Holy Shit Giant Dollhouse.
Yeah. Holy Shit Giant Dollhouse.
This is a I didn't realize what a passion area this was for us.
Yeah, and it could cover giant Lego buildings as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely within the field of the show.
Yeah.
Holy Shit Giant Dollhouse is probably one of the best ideas. It's way better idea than this podcast that we're doing now.
Yeah, I mean, this is just...
This is amateur shit. I mean, this is... Bush League, Dave, is what it is.
Bourgeois.
I mean, we're supposed to be talking about the greatest invention, and we're talking about Legos and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
We can't stay on topic.
We can't stay on a topic, but if that topic
if
was
Giant
Dollhouse...
If we had Holy Shit Giant Dollhouse, we could stay on topic because... Giant Dollhouse. Holy shit. Giant Dollhouse.
Yeah, it's punchy.
I think most of the show would actually consist of us repeating that line.
Yeah.
It would be a form of echolalia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just like, holy shit, Giant Dollhouse.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, Giant Dollhouse.
Okay, so have you seen the scale on this? It's at least 2-1. It's twice as big. It's twice as big.
That is a giant dollhouse.
Holy shit, yeah.
Holy shit, Giant Dollhouse. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think we can milk at least an hour out of that.
We could do a lot with that theme. It's just...
I'd listen to that for 5 hours.
I'm looking back at my life, I'm seeing a lot of instances that have pointed me in this direction. You know, I think my whole life has been building up to Holy Shit Giant Dollhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I can just see, you know, I could remember making, you know, forks that were too big when I was young, you know.
Wait, you made forks?
Yeah, they were too big, yeah.
Why did you make forks? Like, did you work in a prison?
No, I mean, with clay and stuff, when I was being creative as a child.
Who makes forks with clay?
And I would draw little drawings with crayons, It would always be a little guy, and the house would be out of proportion. Very big house. Yeah. It's been a subtle, there have been subtle psychological reminders throughout my life that the direction I need to go professionally, personally,
politically,
philosophically is holy shit, giant dollhouse. Holy shit, giant dollhouse.
Oh. Shit.
Holy shit, giant dollhouse. Let me ask you a question. Has the signifier relationship been broken down for holy shit, giant dollhouse?
No, I'm still keenly aware of what it is. Let's keep going then. I'm keenly aware of
holy
what it is.
Holy shit, giant dollhouse.
Holy shit.
Giant dollhouse. Giant dollhouse.
Holy shit.
Holy shit. Yeah, it's important for us to slowly, as we go through this podcast, in years and years and years of work, for the audience members who listen over and over again, that we destroy the relationship between signifier and signified for them for millions of words.
Okay, so we have to start. Basically, what that tells me is this podcast essentially needs to be aphasia.
Yeah, just like, complete aphasia. We're just working on smelling colors and...
No, that's synesthesia. Well, that's
yeah.
Aphasia is the one where, you know, like bread box... Submarine.
Right, bedrock submarine.
That's aphasia.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking that we could break down the relationship they have with sort of
words all forms through repetition.
Of, yeah, all forms of
through repetition in addition to kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
Sort of a combination
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Giant bread
box submarine.
Holy shit, bread box submarine. But that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important to have goals, and I like that our goals are
yeah.
deconstructing people's ability to understand the world.
Basically ruining language.
Yeah, ruining everything.
Ruining language. Making language not work.
Yeah. We're going to make their brains rethink the whole way they do things.
Okay. That seems like a noble goal.
But, Echolalia.
Echolalia.
Echolalia. Echolalia.
Legolalia.
Echolalia.
Echolalia.
So that was good.
Yes.
It's experimental. We're mm-hmm. clearly from the village.
It's a little bit radio labby. I like it.
Echolalia. Number nine.
Legolalia. Bread box submarine.
Holy shit.
Giant dollhouse.
So this has been an excellent episode. Bread box submarine.
Bread box submarine. Bread box submarine. Submarine bread box.
Legolalia.
Legolalia.
So let me ask you a wildflower. Did you have onyx black white sheep?
Bread box submarine. Bread box submarine. Tube. Mostly tube.
Tube. Go get them. Yo, Jimbo. On a monarch? Yeah. But, well, I also had tube. But it does leave me with wildflower. What cardboard box are we going to impale next week on the victory?
Poster board authentic, I think.
Nutrition facts. Tube nutrition facts. Well, that has been episode 7 of I'm Trying to Think. And by now you probably are, because we've induced aphasia. Which is, that's professionalism at its
yeah.
at its grandest. So, once again, I have been Chuck Warner.
And I have been Dave Stern.
We will leave you on a great note here. Dave, play them out with something good.
Breadbox submarine.
Tube.